Hello and welcome to the worldwide broadcast of the Ted and Austin Brower Show, bringing you the latest world news and health research. I hope everybody had an absolutely amazing weekend today, over the weekend, and having a magnificent Monday today. How are you doing today, Deb?
Oh, blessed, Austin. I had a great weekend. We came down to Sarasota. We had a free hotel room down here, so we got to hang out on the beach yesterday and look at all the people who don't work out anymore, and it was interesting. And so it was fun because we got to do like one day of spring break here in Florida, and it was interesting. And you know what's funny too? Now the Mueller investigation thing has come to an end. And of course, we don't get to even read all of it. Now they're saying there was no Russian collusion. And you and I both said this years ago. We told everybody it was going to be a colossal waste of time and money, and a bunch of people have been arrested, and a bunch of people have gone to jail. Not because of collusion, because they didn't want to basically cooperate, and they may have lied or twisted the truth or whatever they did, like Robert, you know, that one guy, the gay guy. What's his name? The guy who hangs out with Alex Jones all the time? Roger Stone. And basically, you know, he's just basically going to probably go to jail for this unless Trump pardons him. Now, quite frankly, I think Trump needs to pardon everybody involved in the Mueller investigation who got basically busted on technicalities. Because, I mean, come on, think about it. And it goes back to what I've told you guys so many times. If they ask you questions, I plead the fifth, I plead the fifth, I plead the fifth. When I had that witch come after me years ago, and we had to get her into a doggone restraining order hearing, everything was, I plead the fifth, I plead the fifth, I plead the fifth, I plead the fifth, I plead the fifth. She's smart. Her attorney told her, plead the fifth, plead the fifth. Don't answer anything. This is a criminal proceeding. This is don't answer a word. I plead the fifth. I don't remember. I plead the fifth. I don't remember. And that's what Roger Stone should have done. I don't remember. I plead the fifth. I don't remember. I plead the fifth. I don't remember. I plead the fifth. I don't remember anything. In fact, I'm not even here right now. I'm in New York City with food poisoning laying in a bed. I'm not even here. I don't even know who you are. I plead the fifth. And see, that's what you've got to do, man. You got a good attorney. They tell you to shut your mouth. Because what they do is they twist stuff up. Then they get somebody else to come in. They won't corroborate your testimony. They get somebody else to come in and says, well, he's lying about this. He's lying about that. And so what ends up happening, we get into a situation where we think we're telling the truth, and we want to be the be careful with the words I use. You want to be the big deal. You want to be the big guy who comes out there, and you're saying you got the swag going. Got the swag going. I can talk to these guys. They won't trip me up. I'll give Donald Trump credit. He never allowed them to question him openly in a testimonial. They never got to interrogate the president, which they so wanted to do, which I don't believe. I'm going to say one other thing about all this stuff, too. I believe, gosh, I hate to say this. I believe that, you know, Hillary Clinton was supposed to be president. I believe that. I believe that we forced Trump in through prayer, through God, through the conservative. I don't think they had the ability to hack all the Diebold election machines in all the precincts. It was a landslide victory. I still believe that Trump was going to be in there, and he had a choice. He had freedom of will. But once they got the boy in there and they realized they had to do something, they decided it was the Rothschild banking cartel back in the 90s that bailed him out of billions. I'm talking billions of dollars in debt. And they own the boy. And then you get Shadel Adelson comes in and gives hundreds of millions of dollars to his campaign. And then, you know, and this is what Trump's done. And so now they've got him back into a situation where they pretty much completely and totally control him. I mean, think about it for just a second. Last week, he blasted the Democratic Party. Now, think about this. Stay with me now. This is off Breitbart. This is posted on our website, healthmasters.com, newscom, and on the Health Masters website, the link. Donald Trump blasts anti-Jewish Democrats for skipping AIPAC conference, the American Israeli Political Action Committee. He's actually getting personally involved with this, basically what it is, a foreign entity operating on United States soil that's influencing our elections and our governments. And Donald Trump is so controlled by them, that he blasts anti-Jewish Democrats for skipping the American Israeli Political Action Committee banquet or whatever. President Trump reacted to the news Friday that 2020 Democrat and candidates are skipping AIPAC. The Democrats have very much proven to be anti-Israel. There's no question about that. And this is a disgrace, Trump said. I don't know what happened to them, but they are totally anti-Israel. Frankly, I think that they're anti-Jewish. Trump was asked about the conference. He left the White House for a trip to Mar-a-Lago. Now, this includes Elizabeth Warren, Kamala Harris, Bernie Sanders, who's Jewish, by the way, Beto O'Rourke, and South Bend Mayor Pete Buttigieg have all said they would not attend the conference after MoveOn.org began a petition to boycott the event. The policy director for Bernie Sanders told MSNBC the senator was concerned that AIPAC was concerned about the platform AIPAC is providing for leaders who have expressed bigotry and opposed a two-state solution for Israel. Now, here's what's funny about all of this stuff. You know, we've got these people like Bernie Sanders that are complete and totally they're just twisted. They're communists. I mean, they're just twisted. They write all kinds of weird stuff. I don't think he's ever had a real job. And then you get people, you know, like Elizabeth Warren, who basically lied on her Harvard application saying that she was an American Indian because she wanted to get past the affirmative action part. And all of this stuff goes on and on and on. And it's sad to me, Austin, that we're in a situation where, and I'm going to stand up for these Democrats now, that if you don't want to go to AIPAC, that I'm surprised you didn't call him an anti-Semite personally. He called him anti-Jewish, which is pretty much the same thing as far as these guys are concerned. But it lets you know who in the world you can talk about and who in the world you can criticize and who in the world runs everything. And there's another really – and I've got these articles, by the way. I'll post it on Health Masters. And then we have one of us, another one says, learn helplessness, a psychological anchor, voluntary slavery. And, you know, I started reading this article today, and I started thinking, you know what, it's pretty true. It's all about psychologically conditioning a person to accept the results that they're in. I mean, it becomes a personal choice for them. They actually accept it. And here's an interesting part of that. It says the psychological reality is the deep state can't actually control your mind directly. If they could, they would have created a system around that many years ago, by the way, which they are doing with 5G. But they didn't because it hasn't been done yet. The reality is they can only influence your mind, albeit through a host of very effective ways. One of the ways is to destroy your will so that you give up any resistance to their agenda. In conjunction with that, they will handsomely reward willing participation in enslavement, basically termed, you know, becoming a house slave. Thus, with a thing to run away from, social ostracization, and a thing to run towards, rewards for accepting enslavement, most people participate without giving it a second thought. But you say, well, wait a minute, I didn't choose slavery. Well, what you have to understand, a lot of this stuff is that it happens to you when you're a child. You're programmed as a child if you want to become a learned, helpless individual. In other words, I have to be forced by the school system to do what they tell me to do. I can't kick against the code. I can't have a part of my life that says, hey, look, I'm not going to do this. Think about it in the schoolroom. If you answer the question incorrectly, or you question let's give an example of everybody what knows. Let's say I say to you, how many people died in the concentration camps in Germany during World War II? Everybody's going to automatically say 6 million. If you don't say 6 million, you know, and now they're talking about just the Jewish folks. They're not talking about the Christians, or the Germans, or the Protestants, or the Catholics, or anybody who resisted against Hitler. Suddenly, you're stigmatized and said, oh, you're a Holocaust denier. No, I know the Holocaust happened. I don't know how many people died there because I wasn't there. I mean, you know, and I know that these guys who write the history books, they really lie about stuff. So I'm kind of curious as to how to prove all this. Lady up in Canada, who was a German citizen a few years ago, she did that. She said, I'm questioning the Holocaust. She did a little video on it and said, I don't know how many people died. I'd like for the German government to show me where they got these numbers. They said she was a Holocaust denier, and they had her extradited back to Germany, and they put her in prison. She's like 85, 90 years old. You think, well, they wouldn't really do that. They did it. You say, well, why would that happen? Well, because it's a learned helplessness thing they want everybody to understand. It's like you talked about this last week, Austin, about Wesley Snipes. I mean, Wesley Snipes doesn't pay his taxes. He owes a few million dollars in taxes, which is a lot of money. But they don't even give him a chance to do a couple of movies. They have to make an example out of him, you know, and just basically put him in prison. You know, it's the same thing with Martha Stewart. You know, she had plenty of money to pay any kind of fine she had. But yet we have people like Hillary Clinton who go out and they do whatever they want to do, whenever they want to do it, however they want to do it, you know, the witch of Benghazi, and they just let her go. She gets a pass. So my thing is this. I believe that Donald Trump has been a giant psychop since he got in office. I believe the Russian investigation was a giant psychop to keep us off the things that were really happening around the world. I believe it was more bread and circuses for the masses. I think that Donald Trump knew this. I think he was told in the very beginning, don't fight this, don't fight the investigation, let it go, let it go, let it go. Because we kept saying, why didn't he just order this thing stopped? Why didn't he get rid of the attorney general? He didn't do it until here at the end with Sessions. I mean, why didn't he do that 2 years ago when Jeff Sessions recused himself? Why didn't he say, hey, wait a minute, this is basically a witch hunt, we're going to stop it? But he didn't do that. He allowed the witch hunt to go on for years. Now what it's done is basically given him tremendous sympathy in the eyes of even a lot of Democrats, you know, center Democrats, if there's such a thing anymore, and they're saying, wait a minute, this was just absolutely awful what they did to this man and how he was eviscerated in the press. I mean, even Ted Koppel is saying that Donald Trump was treated badly and that the press went after him. Well, wait a minute, how can the press go after him if the press is controlled by the Rothschilds and the Rothschilds controls Trump? Oh, I'm not supposed to ask that question, am I? How can Donald Trump be attacked and not be able to stop it when the Rothschilds, who did the Balfour Declaration, and it's all about the rebuilding of the Third Temple, they know who he is, they know they run the press, unless they knew the outcome. Remember what they said? Remember what they said back in 1920 with Otto Kahn? Otto Kahn says, we control both sides of the narrative so we know and we can create the desired outcome. This is what they did. We just experienced it, and the vast majority of the people in the United States are going to have no idea that ever just happened to them. And what it does, it creates another state of learned helplessness. Oh, just trust the Trump, trust the Q, trust the Trump, just trust the Q. And so you sit there and you go, well, I just need to be quiet and just watch it all happen. We're playing three-dimensional chess. No, we're not. These guys are playing three-dimensional chess on your head is what they're doing. They're messing with your mind, and they're making them think they're doing stuff they're not supposed to do, and they're not. They're doing what they want to do. They're controlling the narrative on both sides of the thing. People say, I've got another friend of mine who says, well, Trump will never be reelected. He'll never be erected. I'm telling you, Trump is going to be reelected, you know, in 2 years. You say, well, how can you know that for certain? Because he's doing what they want him to do. Trump is doing exactly what they want him to do. He is in full tilt going back to rebuild the Third Temple. And if he builds this Third Temple, that's exactly what these guys, the Rothschilds, who run our entire voting machines and everything else, and have these paper cutouts of all these people that run these big corporations like Bezos and the rest of them and Gates. As long as he does what they want, leading towards the rebuilding of the temple, and they're basically, how should you say this, bringing the Antichrist into the temple, like it says in Thessalonians, where he's going to declare himself God. As long as he does this, they really believe that without that temple, this can't happen. And as long as Trump is doing what they want him to do, I mean, he's telling the people who decide not to go to the AIPAC meeting that they're anti-Jewish, anti-Israel. What the heck, man? Bernie Sanders is Jewish. I mean, now he's anti. But now they're going to call him a self-hater. But always remember, Bernie Sanders showed up one day with the whole cheek busted open during the run with Hillary Clinton. Somebody let the boy have an understanding that he wasn't going to do what he was doing, and he wasn't going to contest these elections because they were controlling the narrative. Guys, pay attention on who you can't criticize. Pay attention on what they say, and you'll learn really quickly who runs the planet. In fact, like Sheila Zelinsky did that one show with me that was immediately yoked off of YouTube. We did like a two-hour show, hour-and-a-half show. It was called Planet Rothschild. I mean, I think 5 days it was yanked that she got a big strike against her site. Guys, find out who you can't criticize, what you can't talk about, and think about what I'm saying. You say, I don't agree with you, Ted. I don't agree with you. Okay, well, don't agree with me. That's all right. But think about it. Donald Trump never fought against this investigation. He just let it go as if he knew what the outcome was going to be. What do you think, Oz?
No, there's no doubt about it. I almost think that it's multifaceted as far as what this entire investigation was about. I mean, you have to understand, it went on, this has gone on for almost 2 years now. It's tens of millions of dollars down the drain for nothing. I think what part of this was from the beginning was A, to keep the left-right paradigm narrative in the mainstream media, the CNN constantly talking about the collusion, Fox constantly coming in and defending Trump or whatever other narrative they wanted to do. And I think part of it also, too, may have been from the beginning to get Trump on a tighter choke chain. And what I say with that is, we've seen that when he first was running for office, again, they did not want him winning. Hillary was the winner they already wanted. They already had her on the face of Newsweek, already printed off, no covers of Trump ready to go. Hillary Clinton, cases of Newsweek with her face plastered all over it a couple days before the election. We saw that. So we already know that that was the ultimate plan. So they had to go to plan B when Trump actually got elected. And I think this Russian collusion was a bit of a choke chain on him to kind of say, hey, listen, we're going to let this go on in perpetuity if we need to. We'll let it roll on until the entire 2020 election if we need to do so and make sure you never get reelected. Or you can kind of be a good boy, you do exactly what we tell you to do, we'll make this eventually go away right before you start campaigning for the 2020 election, which, by the way, guys, if you look back at the dates, the very beginning of June 2015 is when he started campaigning for his 2016 election. Well, we are now going into April 2019, which means by those dates, in 8 weeks, he is going to start campaigning for the 2020 election. Just let you know that. So the Mueller report comes out essentially 2 months before he's going to start campaigning now. There's no collusion. Everything's gravy. Everything's good. Congress really has no stake on trying to impeach him now. They may try some crap and pull some rabbits out of a hat, but in reality, nothing's going to happen. They have no grounds to do anything now. And this has gone on now in the media for 2 years. Now they've basically exonerated him. Now he has the ability to start his campaign. He's fully exonerated. There's no issues. There's no collusion, blah, blah, blah. He can start his campaign now, and he can run for the 2020 election, which, I might add, I will be happy to have him in office over somebody like Hillary, just for the fact, too, that Hillary was just obnoxious, quite frankly. I couldn't even stand listening to her speak. I mean, everything she does has been just nothing but corruption and lies and death for the last 20 years that she's even been involved in politics. I mean, just the fact that she was directly involved in Benghazi and Libya drives me up the wall that she is not in prison right now. I'll tell you that right now. I mean, what she did with Obama and what they colluded to have all those people killed in Libya and set the entire thing up and gave the coordinates to that CIA compound to make sure everybody died in Benghazi, that whole aspect, and the fact that we've never seen a full-blown investigation that lasted up to 2 years into Obama and Clinton for that drives me up the wall. So all these things are going on right now to say this. Now he's been exonerated. He has two options now. And we're going to see what Trump really is made of. Is he actually going to do what he needs to do because he doesn't have this choke chain on him anymore with this on his back? Or is he going to continue to capitulate and do exactly what the globalists want him to do? I hope he does the right thing, but it doesn't seem very evident. You know, as you guys know, tomorrow, March 26th, ATF's bump fire ban will go into effect in the entire continental United States of America. If you are in possession of a bump fire stock as of tomorrow, an ATF or any law enforcement agency finds you, you will be charged with possession of an unregistered machine gun with 10 years in prison for having a plastic stock that has no effect on your trigger assembly in your possession now. Just want to remind everybody of that, since everybody seemed to have forgotten. I got an email from Gun Owners of America on Friday, and this is interesting. Just 4 days before the bump stock ban was going to be effective, this is on Friday, the federal district judge in Michigan finally issued the ruling on Gun Owners of America request for an injunction blocking the bump stock ban. Despite repeated pleas to expedite the case, the judge waited literally to the last minute on Friday to issue his ruling denying the motion. Imagine that. Not only that, the district court deferred to the ATF's supposed expertise, and they're saying they're using the ATF's rationale that the bump stock turns an AR-15 into a machine gun, noting now that ATF can easily interpret the possession of something as simple as a rubber band for constructive intent to convert semi-auto automatic into full auto. The judge simply discarded all the arguments from Gun Owners of America, saying our fears were not well-founded. What's more, listen to this, the judge claimed that the federal law in regard to definition of machine guns is ambiguous. Hence, the judge claimed it is justified for the ATF to interpret the law the way they have it. What's ironic about this is Gun Owners of America's attorney responded by the point on the judge's reasoning on multiple other cases for decades where courts have ruled the statute was unambiguous. Suddenly now, completely different situation, the judges are now saying that it's ambiguous. The statute's ambiguous. That's what they said in the past. All the times when anybody got arrested for some type of machine gun arrest, they said The law is unambiguous. There's no interpretation of it. It's set in stone. ATF makes the laws. It's an unambiguous law. It's clear cut. No question about it. Now the judges are saying that the law before was ambiguous and that there's absolutely no legitimate purpose that they could have allowed the law to stay into effect, and ATF needed to come in and redefine the entire law. Otherwise, now allowing bump fire stock owners to be prosecuted for possession of an unregistered machine gun. So this is something that's really, really troubling to me, as this, again, was what Donald Trump ordered ATF to do. And now they have done it, and they have effectively opened up a loophole now, by the way, by going in and changing the 1934 Gun Act, the NFA Act, of the definition of machine guns, to essentially open up the definition of machine guns to be interpreted by anything that they want now. This is something that I talked about repeatedly when everybody goes, oh, I don't like bonfire stocks, I don't use them anyways, I could care less about them, they don't affect me one bit, my shotgun or whatever. It has nothing to do with that. They were allowed now to change the definition of a law almost 100 years old to make it so open to interpretation that ATF can now come in and essentially deem anything they want to be a machine gun if they say so. What's ironic to me is I looked at some stuff over the weekend. There are only been like two judges in history that have ever ruled against ATF. No judges ever ruled against ATF, including this one in Michigan. They ruled in favor of ATF again. Always in favor of ATF. Doesn't it seem quite odd to everybody that we have a group of bureaucrats, unelected officials, and an alphabet agency that holds so much power that even the judges of the United States of America are afraid to rule against them? That they will not question their narrative, that they will not question their reasoning, their interpretation of a law, that will not go against them, that literally will capitulate any time anything is done with ATF. Does anybody else question that? I mean, we've seen it all the way from Ruby Ridge to Waco and everything in between. Judges every time, oh, rule in ATF favor, rule in ATF favor, rule in ATF favor. We didn't elect, I don't remember last time I got to vote on ATF laws. Last time I checked, we didn't get to vote who oversees ATF and their operations. So now we have an agency that has superseded constitutional Second Amendment law, redefined what a law was put in place 100 years ago, all by the directive of the United States president, and now will make the population of the United States a convicted felon if they are convicted of being in possession of a plastic stock that has zero effect on the firing mechanism of a rifle. Just want to kind of get that out there this morning because nobody's really talked about it in the last couple months, and nobody's brought this up as far as on mainstream media about it going into effect tomorrow. So I just want to kind of shed some light on it to understand what we had happened 3 months ago now, and it's pretty troubling to say the least, Ed.
No, I agree with you, Austin. I mean, you know, quite frankly, I mean, bump fire stock, I mean, it's not the bump fire stock because, you know, your friends are right. I mean, I've never used one, but you can't hit anything with them. I've watched people try to do it on videos because it's like with any automatic weapon, you know, they want to raise up. You know, that's why you shoot short bursts, you know, three-round bursts. But, you know, it just – I remember years ago we were in Las Vegas and we were there for a radio show. We were there in the motorhome. And we went to one of those places where you could shoot a Thompson submachine gun. And Austin, I know you remember this. And we loaded one up with 100 rounds in it or whatever it cost. I think it was $50 to shoot it or whatever for 100 rounds. And I remember you try to hold it down as you're shooting it, and it runs up to the right. It just comes up. And you know, you really can't maintain it because it's pulling too hard because of the torque from the twisting of the bullets coming out of the barrel. And you think, well, what the heck? So same thing. And they taught the guys in Vietnam. They said, don't, you know, fire three round bursts. Don't fire because you'll dump a magazine. You'll dump a 20 round magazine in 6-7 seconds. And all, you know, that's longer, a lot longer than that, about 7 rounds a second. You'll dump a 20 round magazine in 3-4 seconds. And they're like, so they're running out of ammo when they're fighting the Vietnamese for let me say this right. Well, they're fighting the Vietnamese and the Cambodians for control of the poppy fields in Southeast Asia. Oh, that's right. Oh, whoops, I wasn't supposed to say that. As they could put their 50 kilos of heroin in every casket of every GI that was coming back from the Southeast Asia conflict. It was never declared war. I mean, what a mess that whole thing was over there. I talked yesterday at this hotel I'm staying in down here in Sarasota. Some guy was walking around. He's in good shape, and he worked for the hotel. He's in a suit. So I finally started talking to him. He was an airborne Army Ranger. I mean, these are pretty tough guys. I mean, these guys are the ones that jump out of airplanes behind enemy lines. And he had been in Afghanistan on numerous combat missions. I asked him, I said, did you have to see all the poppy fields? He goes, yep. He goes, he says, we're over there guarding poppy fields. And I'm like, whoa. And he, I started asking him some questions. He goes, well, you know what, bud? I've been out of this for a while now. He goes, I had a shoulder injury. I got a plate in my shoulder. He goes, I don't even want to talk about it. He says, it was something I just want to put behind me and pretend like it never happened. And I said, well, do you think we should have been there? And he goes, absolutely not. And see, and this is the kind of stuff that soldiers come back with, you know, PTSD. Or, yeah, think about it for a second. You say, well, I'd like to go over there and kill me some Afghans, kill me some Muslims. Well, wait a minute. Guys, I know too many people have been in the military. And, you know, the ones that have really killed people, they're not the same anymore. You know, I had a guy who lived a couple doors down from me a few years ago. And he was an airborne Army Ranger. He had 100 confirmed kills in Vietnam. And he said he didn't want to talk about it. One day I got to know him really well, and he started talking about it a little bit. He goes, man, I wish I'd never done any of that. And he goes, the memories still haunt me at night. And I'm like, what? So the guys who really get involved in that, who really go out and kill a bunch of people, unless they're like a, you know, I guess a psycho, they don't really want to talk about it, and they're not happy they were involved in any of that. Because, you know, the Bible tells us not to kill. Now, if your family's being attacked by another psycho, and they're coming into your house in the middle of the night, and they're going to kill you, your family, or kill you, you know, you're going to shoot them, I don't think that's going to affect you. But when you go into a village, when you got helpless people, and you're throwing flashbangs and grenades in the rooms, and you're coming in there, and you're having all these little children all dismembered and dead because of what you just threw in there, that's got to mess with your head. And I know Austin's got some people he knows that went over there, and they come back, they're never the same anymore. They're like messed up, and you say, well, what the heck happened to you? And they're like, well, we really don't know, and we really don't want to talk about it, but guys, you know, we're on like psychiatric medication now. And you're like, wow, this is just really absolutely awful that this actually happens, and people have to deal with this for the rest of their life. Like I told you, my mom was suffering with post-traumatic stress syndrome, you know, from the war. I mean, and she'd run hot and cold. And I love my mom. I'm not bad-mouthing. I'm just letting you know, it's just she had a condition. Well, she self-medicated with cigarettes, and thank God she didn't smoke when she was pregnant with us, and alcohol, and thank God she didn't drink when she was pregnant with my wife, my sister, or I. But, I mean, my brother was born in Germany during the war in 1941. And he saw some crazy stuff over there when he was young. It directly affected him, and he's an alcoholic. And I'm not saying that he wouldn't have been an alcoholic had he not been in the war, but it sure didn't help. And, you know, and my mom was just very – she'd be unbelievably nice and just flip and be unbelievably bad. And she had – one thing I used to always say to her, the word for frightened or scared is bunga in German. It's be like a bunga, B-bunga, B-A-N-G-A. I'm not sure how to spell it. I'm not sure how to spell it. But it's called bunga. And I used to say to her, Mutter, du bist immer bunga. You're always scared. Then Austin, she lived her whole life in terror. Just, I mean, all the time. She's always afraid somebody's going to kill her, or they're going to shoot her, or they're going to stab her. I still remember when we had the Cuban Missile Crisis. My father and her were divorced by this point, and it was in the early 60s. And we lived on Highway 92 in Central Florida, which was the main way from MacDill Air Force Base and the big Air Force bases to get across the state to go to 27, because there were no interstates back then. And I remember for days on end, we had convoys of military troops. Literally, it's a two-lane road in front of our house. I mean, they blocked the whole road. There was non-ending military troops going to South Florida. My mom just sat there and just cried and squalled and bawled and carried on like the world was coming again. And she said to me, she goes, das fängt wieder an, which means it's all starting again. In other words, I saw this in Germany. I know how this ends. This is going to be awful. And that's how she lived her life. So when you go involved with people who get involved with these different groups who have to go to other overseas and get involved in combat and killing people, it's a big psych up on all of them. And it really, really, really affects them in an incredibly negative way. Real quick, I've mentioned this before, and I'll mention it again to you. It's a health article. And it says, never touch receipts because they use bisphenol A. This is like when you go to the gas pumps, or even when you go to a cash register and they give you a receipt. They use bisphenol A as an ink. And you need to not rub your hands on that. It's really important. Keeping your receipts may be a good financial sense, but handling them involves significant health risks, and you need to know how to mitigate it. It's, you know, here you go. Here's the article. If you're like me, you hesitate at the checkpoint counter whenever the cashier asks you, would you like your receipt? Now, I was like, throw it in the bag. If your inner account is alive and well, you'll find yourself wanting to keep it, which means touch it. But on the other hand, you must be ready to aware of the information about how bad it is. There are 50 adverse health effects associated with touching BPA's receipts. This is thermal receipt paper. This is sports bottles. This is basically canned food. This is children's toys. All of this stuff. The toxicities are a major, major, major concern. So just be careful. If you're going to do it, have them just give you the edge of the receipt and don't touch the ink on the receipt and just put it in your wallet, and then you can store it for IRS, or if you need to keep it, if not, just toss it, or if you need to reconcile your bank statement at the end of the month. But just remember, you need to avoid it because it's one of those things, it's just not healthy to do, and it's not something you should ever allow yourself to think is okay, because it's simply not okay if you do it. Here's another article from the Shark Tank guy, Kevin O'Leary. He says retiring early doesn't work. And he said he could retire when he was in his 30s. And he did. He said he kind of quit. And he said after a couple of years, he was bored out of his mind. He goes, wow. And, you know, he thinks, think about that for a second. He was bored out of his mind because he retired early. And also, remember this, far from a health standpoint, research has found there's no health benefits linked to older age retirement, including a decreased risk of dementia because you're still using your brain. And a paper published by the National Bureau of Economic Research found that social contacts are a side effect of employment that keeps workers mentally agile, and that even dislike colleagues and bad bosses are better than social isolation because at least they keep the mind healthy and active. Guys, I've seen so many people retire young, and they go, well, I want to retire young. I want to just be able to go out and play golf the rest of my life. And then after about a year or 2 years of playing golf, they go, well, you know, nobody else is retired. And he goes, there's nobody else around, and I'm really bored. I'd rather go back to work. See, working is not just about money. You can't just work for money. But most people don't understand this until they stop working. Work gives you a purpose. It defines who you are. I have a friend of mine that I knew back in college the other day. I told her that Sharon and I were still actively working in Health Masters, and we were doing radio talk shows, and Sharon was writing recipes and working on books, and that we continue to work towards a defined goal and objective. She says, how wonderful it is that you guys still have the ability to work towards that in your 60s. Because work basically, in a way, kind of defines who you are. You know, we have a relationship with God and Christ, but the world knows us by what we are and what we do. It actually can help provide a place that where you're social with other people. That's why I actually enjoy emails that I get from many of you, and and you guys know I always answer you. It may be a thumbs up or a smiley face or a thank you, or it may be a 3 or 4 paragraph little paper back to you. I've got one lady, her name's Karen, and she just did some extensive research on the Bible in end times and eschatology. I mean, gosh, I bet she spent 10 hours on this thing. And I was reading through it this morning, and I thought, wow, I'm going to thank this lady so much for what she does and all the information she sends. And I've got other people like Matthew and Mark and just a boatload of people, Brad, who send me all of this stuff all of the time, Terrence, that helps me to put these shows together. Because when you have interaction with people all day long in an interesting way, it even helps you live longer. Again, because it's good for brain health. If you have focus to dreams, as a man thinketh in his heart, so is he. Even Jesus said, I've not yet reached my goal, when he was going to Jerusalem. We all have to have goals set up for our lives every day of our life. And that includes health goals, by the way. You've got to realize, hey, I'm going to eat healthy this morning when I had breakfast here at the hotel. First thing I said, do you have butter? Yes. I need eggs. I need, you know, organic eggs cooked in butter. Okay, we have that. And Sharon says, well, are your berries organic? Yes, we have that. Are your steel-cut oats organic? Yes, we have that. And so we ordered off the menu, not off the buffet. And then we looked up there, and they had a buffet set up, and they had some salmon that was all farm-raised. It was like a light pink, almost white. You could tell it had been dyed. It was nasty. It had the dye on the plate where it had been colored, you know, because it's not, you know, wild, fresh-caught salmon. And I thought to myself, that's really nasty. And, you know it's got to have parasites in it, because that's what happens with these fish that are kept in these nets like this. And I thought, that's just not something I'm interested in. So ask yourself a question. Do you have a goal for your health? Do you have a goal for your future? I mean, you can set income goals. That's great. But you also set health goals. Well, I want to, like I told Sharon, I said, I need you to help me lose this 10 pounds. I have 10 pounds that I just have just, apparently I'm in love with this 10 pounds. And it's got to go. And I told Sharon, I said, I need to drop this 10 pounds. It's just healthier for me to be lighter. And I said, I don't have high blood pressure. My blood pressure is perfect. My energy levels are great. I can still work out good in the gym. I can still hike, not be short of breath, but I just need to drop this 10 pounds. I need to have that goal in my life. As far as from a physical goal, we have spiritual, physical, mental, professional, financial goals all the time. Why? Because it gives our sense of purpose a sense of direction. I'm going to repeat that. It gives our sense of purpose a sense of direction. It allows us to proceed towards those goals. Because, guys, if you don't have a goal, if you don't have a purpose, if you don't have a sense of direction, what are you going to do the rest of your life? I mean, that's why I love a lot of you guys. I know Matthew from California told me this week. He goes, I'd love to do research, and I send this research to you guys because you use it on the show, which I do, by the way. I use a lot of y'all stuff on the show, and you guys know that. And I said, it's a sense of purpose. It's a sense of direction. And he says that, you know, we've saved his life on this show. He's recommitted his life to Christ. I mean, it's given him a sense of purpose to know that Jesus Christ is there for him. See, this is what we have to know, is that we have to be called and our lives have to be set according to a purpose. Zig Ziglar said it this way. He says, you have to be a meaningful specific, not a wandering generality. Let me repeat that. You need to be a meaningful specific and not a wandering generality. You've got to have the ability to have a goal-oriented life that's always in the process of accomplishing things. Why? Because that's the way God made us, and that's the way we're supposed to live. Austin, what do you think?
Excellent info, no question about it. Absolutely. Also, too, in other news we have going on here, up in Canada, this is interesting, in the wake of what we have seen with the Deland shooting, whether or not that was actually legitimate or staged or set up, we're still, you know, kind of on the wall with a lot of that stuff. A lot of the intel we have seen is very, very strange with that whole situation. Now, Trudeau in Canada, they're now introducing a gun bill to tighten even more gun sales and licensing in the country of Canada. They said gun retailers will be required to keep all records of any firearm inventories and sales for over 20 years under the new legislation. They said it also will require any purchase of any rifle or shotgun to have a valid license. In addition, the bill will expand the scope of background checks on those who want to acquire a gun. Instead of just the 5 years immediately preceding a license application, personal history questions, including a person's entire lifetime and including social media activity, will be examined before a license is given. They said while crime rates in Canada have generally been declining for more than two decades, offenses involving firearms are becoming more prevalent, allegedly since 2013. Ironically enough, that is when a lot of the more aggressive gun laws went into place. It's always funny to me when you see gun laws go into effect and crime go through the roof, not something that's an abnormal trend, quite frankly. Also, too, in other news, this is wild out in the UK. The UK government has now claimed Christianity is not a religion of peace, after refusing to allow a Christian convert bid for asylum in an unbelievably offensive letter. The applicant indicated that he had converted to Christianity from Islam because of its peaceful nature. In Christianity, in contrary, he said it's talking about peace, other than Islam, which is usually violence, rage, and revenge. He said the official that declined his asylum application cobbled together six passages from the Old Testament in an effort to prove that the applicant's view of Christianity was wrong. He went on to say, and this is what the official wrote in the actual rejection letter, "These examples are inconsistent with your claim that you converted to Christianity after discovering it was peaceful. The rejection letter to the applicant admonishes passive-aggressively an implicit ruling that Christianity is not peaceful, certainly not relative to Islam, and indeed is so clearly not peaceful that the Home Office does not consider perceived peacefulness a credible reason for your conversion. Their file is being denied." So now they are starting to say in the United Kingdom that Islam is a religion of peace, and you can pretty much come here unfettered, unmolested, free on your way to turn the United Kingdom into a Muslim caliphate. But if you've converted to Christianity from Islam and you want to move there, they're saying that Christianity is not a religion of peace, and they therefore are denying your asylum application. Really strange stuff. And also, too, in another move that is very something that was quite, you know, eye-opening here. You know, we have seen the quality of birth, the health pregnancy issues in the United States are becoming worse and worse and worse. That's just a fact. All the way from the exposure of what we've seen with glyphosate, just, you know, early births, lots more C-sections in the United States, more health issues, especially after birth. Well, now a University of Buffalo study did a study, and this is interesting. African refugee women in the United States are now experiencing healthier pregnancies than women born in the United States, despite receiving less prenatal care, found a recent University of Buffalo study. They said compared to U.S.-born black and white women, African refugee women had fewer pregnancy health risk, fewer preterm births, and higher rates of healthy vaginal deliveries. The disparity, says the researchers, is tied to the various unhealthy behaviors and practices present within the U.S. culture. They said elements of the U.S. life, such as eating large amounts of processed high-fatty foods, an increased reliance on cars for transportation, a more individualistic society, and drug and alcohol use is, in fact, contributing to this issue. They said the unexpected results reveal that the healthy immigrant effect, a phenomenon where immigrants experience healthier outcomes than native population, extends to reproductive health all across the board now in their findings. And this is something that we've talked about that is quite strange, because we're starting to see this massive influx of immigrants in the United States, a lot of them being asylum, a lot of them being illegal, a lot of them being all across the board, and we're seeing the population of Americans that were born here, Native Americans, the population is declining rapidly, while at the same time we see the immigrant population that's here and their birth rates go through the roof dramatically. And now we're seeing in this Buffalo study that those individuals that are immigrants here are actually having healthier pregnancies and having less complications during pregnancies throughout the pregnancy and after, which I found to be very, very interesting, Dad, which goes to show you the level of drugs, pharmaceutical drugs, vaccines, GMO foods, pesticides, herbicides, fluoride, and everything else that we're being exposed to in the United States is having a negative effect on the population, because most of those things are not heavily prevalent in a lot of the other third world countries throughout the entire world.
Well, that's exactly right, Austin. And what people need to understand is that it's a generational thing. It's called epigenetics. And what it does is it's just something that from one generation to the next generation to the next generation, it gets sicker and sicker and sicker. So we've had massive infertility problems with the white population of the United States and, of course, the indigenous Americans too, including blacks. I mean, we have a huge population decrease, and the blacks have basically committed eugenics on themselves through abortion. I mean, almost the vast majority of the 60 million children who have been aborted in the United States, if those numbers are even correct, it could be higher than that. We don't know. We're black. And so we need to understand that, you know, the blacks have, like, depopulated themselves because of Margaret Sanger, who was basically an unbelievable racist who hated black people. And then the whites, of course, have gone and they're into massive population reduction. And now they have all these quote unquote forced Gardasil vaccines, forced vaccines, all of these things. I mean, UPS is now going to be working supposedly on this new program to basically have somebody ship you, you know, a vaccine, and they're going to send like a nurse through UPS, you know, United Parcel Service, to go inject you with this doggone vaccine. I mean, it's all about reducing the population of the white people and the black people, the indigenous people that have been here for hundreds of years, and bringing in a new group of people into the United States that haven't been exposed to these types of vaccines and chemicals for the past three or four generations. And that's the problem that we've run into. I mean, a lot of the people from Central and South America, though they bring in things like tuberculosis and all kinds of other diseases like that because they haven't had any type of clean place to live, and they're living in sometimes in garbage dumps, you know, and that's what we found out with the immunizations that happened with us back in the 40s, 50s, 60s, and 70s. I mean, it really wasn't the immunization that caused a decline in these different types of infectious diseases. It was the way these people live. They still have these same places. I mean, they're eating out of garbage dumps down there in Mexico City. I mean, it's well known. Not everybody, of course. I'm talking about the very, very poor. And then they come up here, and suddenly they've got infectious diseases. And, you know, and then you have other people from the rural parts of Mexico that have their own farms with non-GMO products, no glyphosate products, no immunizations. And they've got a pretty good constitution, a pretty good reserve energy, and they're pretty doggone fertile, hence the let's have six anchor babies as soon as we get here kind of protocol, and then they get all the money from us. It's all about Cloward and Piven. That was brought to us by the Frankfurt School that I discussed in detail a few weeks ago, that was started in early 20s in Germany, which was moved to the United States in 1933, which went then to a major university up there with Cloward and Piven up there at I forgot the name of the university. It'll come to me in a second. And you know, and then what happened is they basically had to figure out how to stamp out nationalism and destroy the people in the United States, the indigenous people. It's very, very important. Columbia University. Thank you, Lord. By the way, ship almost capsized last week. The Viking Sky, which I think I've been on that ship. It basically arrived at a Norwegian port after engine failure, and it had to drop anchors offshore in heavy, heavy seas with heavy, heavy wind, and had to have the people medevac, not medevac, but helicopter back off the ship. Over hundreds and hundreds of people were taken off via helicopter, which is extremely dangerous in heavy wind. So that ship must have been very, very close to capsizing, Austin, or they never would have done that. What people don't realize, when they go on one of these giant cruise ships, and don't get me wrong, I've been on a bunch of cruises over the years, but, you know, when we were on that last ship that basically had almost been sunk when trying to go around Cape Horn, and the whole ship leaked. It was a disastrous ship. It was basically it was a Carnival ship. It was a Royal, it was a Holland America ship, which I will never go on Carnival or Holland America yet after this experience. Don't, by the way, I highly suggest you don't use that shipping line. Any Carnival ships or Holland America. It's not what you think it is. We had hair in the food. It was a disaster on that boat. That boat should have been scuttled after it almost had been sunk. It was, and they kept it going. But what you don't realize is how susceptible you are to sinking. They had a wave crash over the back of that boat and broke all the windows out in the main dining room area when they were trying to go around the Horn. That was on the, like, about a year earlier on that same boat. Then it had to be put in a dry dock and get repaired, and it was never right. When you get in a heavy wind, when you get a ship that's 1,000 feet long and 200 feet wide, like that newest one's 1,000, 1,200 feet long and almost 300 feet wide, these are giant floating platforms that are 10, 12, 14 stories tall. And when you get a 30 or 40 or 50 mile an hour wind pushing against the side of that thing, it's like a giant sail. And if this ship hadn't dropped its anchors, it would have been pushed ashore, probably would have capsized, you know, hit the rocks underneath, and we could have had another big experience at mess like we had a few years ago when that ship sank off the coast of Italy. Guys, it's so important to know who you're going to go on a cruise ship with, know where you're going to go, and know the dangers involved, and know what your rights are. Because a lot of you don't understand, because I didn't understand this. You know, when you're on a cruise ship and you've got a captain, he has authority over you. You're like a little, you're like in a dictatorship. You think I'm joking? I'm telling you, it's not. I told you that story a few weeks ago about what happened to me on that one ship. It was, of course, Holland America. I got fussed at by this guy because of the club howl, because of the doggone kids program. And I tell you what, that only had happened to moi once, and I haven't been back on that ship. And in fact, I haven't even been on the cruise. That was 6 years ago. I haven't even been on another cruise since then, and I don't really have a desire to go on another one because, quite frankly, you're at the whim of that captain, and he can do whatever he wants to do. So be very careful. And the reason I'm saying this is we've got a summer coming up, and just realize they take your passport away from you when you get on these boats. You say, well, no, they don't. Yeah, no, they do. They hold your passports, and then that's why they can run them through customs, and you don't have to be dealing with trying to go walk through customs. And they don't want you jumping ship. And here's the main reason: they don't want you jumping ship anywhere with your passport and leaving them with a bunch of bills that you decide you're not going to pay. So always remember that. This is what these guys love to do on a regular basis. By the way, the Super Bowl could be cashless by 2025, which I'm happy for them because I don't watch the Super Bowl anyhow. I don't watch professional wrestling on that scale. The Visa and the NFL team are now teaming up to promise events that run only on digital payments. Visa and the National Football League extended their partnerships through 2025, and they promise to have a cashless experience at the Super Bowl in the future. For now, some retailers and vendors of Super Bowl 53 are already going cashless. And just to add to that, the nearly 500 ATMs close a month in Britain's rush to a cashless society. I'm not saying 500 ATMs close. 500 close a month, which is 6,000 ATMs are closing every year in Britain, pushing them more and more to the cashless society. Why? This is Kabbalah. This is basically this is Masonic teachings. Always remember, guys, the Kabbalah is what developed the Masons. You got to get that. The Kabbalah and the Masonic lodges are interwoven. That's why the Masons are absolutely just incensed on rebuilding the Third Temple. People don't understand that. I've told you that repeatedly. They're the ones who pushed for the reforming of the Palestinian state into Israel back in the 1840s. I mean, 100 years, over 100 years ago, 160, 170 years ago. This has been going on for almost 200 years now, pushing this to the rebuilding of the Third Temple, and it's been pushed through the Masonic lodges, and they're the same group that are also being run by the Rothschild Banking Cartel, which has taken over the Masonic lodges through the Kabbalah teachings. Just thought I'd make that big statement right quick, who are also the ones that are pushing for a cashless society so they can control us better under their one world government and their one world religion. And always remember, guys, you know, people are always asking me, why have you not studied eschatology? And I have, somewhat. But when you start getting into all the metaphors and all the examples and all the things that are being used in the book of Revelation, It's a mind twist, and you got to flip it back to Book of Daniel. Always remember these preachers that come on TV that say, hey, I'm this and I'm that, and we're going to do this and we're going to do that, blah, blah, blah. Here's what's going to happen at the end times. That's their interpretation of what's going to happen. That's not necessarily true. I mean, this whole thing with the new with dispensationalism, it wasn't even taught until Darby wrote this stuff, you know, and then, you know, Scofield took it over. And remember, a lot of Darby's original teachings have been deleted, you know, from the Scofield Bible. They realized they couldn't back any of this stuff up with Scripture. He was just kind of doing his own little thing. And quite frankly, I believe, and I'm going to come out on the record to say this now, I believe that Darby was being influenced by Kabbalah and influenced by the Masonic lodges when he wrote this to justify and to twist Scripture in such a way that would justify the reforming of the state of Israel and the rebuilding of the Third Temple and basically the anointing of the Antichrist, like it says in Thessalonians, because they know what the Scripture says also. And this is what they also believe this, and the Kabbalah teaches all of this stuff. But think through who's telling you this stuff. And I'm going to say one other thing. I personally believe, I mean, now we've got John Hagee saying that we don't have a second covenant through Christ. What the heck is wrong with this guy? Somebody dropped this boy on his head. I mean, something's wrong with him. He's either gone senile. He's saying that the only covenant we have through God is through the Jewish covenant that we had with Abraham, and that Jews don't have to be saved. They have a special dispensation, so to speak, that they don't have to accept Jesus Christ, and that we basically have to convert to this type of belief. This is all from the Kabbalah. Now, I have to ask you guys a question. Has John Hagee secretly converted to Judaism? There you go. I'm just going to ask it. Has John Hagee? If I could sit from him across the corner from him, I have a friend of mine who basically was with him 3 weeks ago, 2 weeks ago in Washington D.C. at that pastors' conference up there that Trump did not attend. I talked about this a few weeks ago, and he said Hagee went off on this whole thing about Jerusalem and Israel like a 3-minute oratory. I'd have stopped him as soon as he got done. I would let him finish, and I'd let him finish. I'd ask him. I said, "Well, Mr. Hagee, Rabbi Hagee, whatever you are, Pastor Hagee. I mean, let's." Pick something here. Are you really a Christian anymore? Have you converted to Judaism? I mean, are you a Jew? Is that what you want us to do, is convert to Judaism? I mean, what you're telling us, we don't have a second covenant through Christ Jesus? We don't, that Christians don't have a covenant? I mean, what the heck's wrong with you? Do you not read the book of Hebrews? Do you not read the New Testament? I mean, do you not read any of this stuff? Are you just doing the Kabbalah thing now? And I'm going to say this again. I'm going out on a limb on this one off, so I'm going to say it anyhow. When you have major Christian TV networks whose children marry Jews, who have Jewish weddings and host these Jewish weddings on their TV networks for hours on end. I'm not going to mention any names. Don't we have to ask ourselves a question? Who's running the Christian network? Just thought it. Are the Kabbalists running the Christian network? Have these people, I really believe a lot of these TV evangelists are secret Kabbalists and secret Masons. I know that Pat Robertson, years ago, he had a picture of himself on a magazine, and he was wearing the lion's claw across his chest, which is a symbol of Masonic lodges and being a Mason. And people were questioning him, dude, what's up with this? This is a Masonic hand sign. And, oh, I just had my hand that way. No, you don't. Who puts their hand like a lion claw in front of their chest? Who does stuff like that? And every time you talk and watch the 700 Club, everything's about Israel, Israel, Israel. Now, don't get me wrong. I don't have a bone to pick for Israel. I could care less what they do over there. Just leave me out of their loop. But don't try to force me into believing Kabbalah and all the other stuff that they do. I don't want to – whatever, man. And don't tell me basically I'm not going to be blessed if I don't bless these guys that like to kill Palestinians and run the World Banks. I mean, none of this makes any sense to me. I mean, we're all blessed through Abraham, whose seed was through Jesus Christ. That's how I interpret that scripture. And so you say, well, I don't believe that, Ted. Well, that's okay. Go ahead and do your own research on it. Figure it out for me. Let me know and send me an email on it. And if I feel like I made a mistake, I've done it before. A few weeks ago, I made a mistake. Scrapped the whole show because I misquoted something I thought Trump had said. It was one of his books that one of the other authors of the book had said. So if I make a mistake, I'll clean it up. But guys, think about the eschatology stuff. There's so much interpretation being led to this. Don't allow yourself to be caught up in the Kabbalah teachings. And is John Hagee a Kabbalist? I mean, he has all these rabbis come in and teach for him. He runs around with a prayer shawl on him. Has he converted to Judaism? Does he want all of us to convert to Judaism? Is that what it's all about, converting to a new world order, a new world religion? Is that what they want through Kabbalah? Is that going to be the new world of religion? Jared Kushner is a Kabbalist. Ivana Trump's a Kabbalist. You know, Ivana Kushner. I mean, she wears a little red string around her wrist. They sure seem to be running the White House. I mean, Kushner is so dirty, it's unbelievable. Nobody ever talks about him. Why? Because the media is controlled by these guys, too. Just a thought. Guys, I love you. I appreciate you. You guys rock the planet. You know, I just want to thank you for giving me the opportunity to pray for you again this morning and being part of our family. I love you guys. I like it when you let me talk about this stuff. And I'm going to do a little bit more in-depth stuff on scriptures as we move on down the road, because I've got to ask you guys a lot of questions. Just trying to figure some of this stuff out and think through it with me, because, guys, there's some weird stuff being taught in churches right now. Weird, weird stuff. And why is it these TV evangelists have these multiple jets who are all Zionists? Why are they given so much airtime? Why are they promoted so heavily? You know, why was moi, yours truly, taken off of Christian TV? I've been on Christian TV in a long time, as far as in a major network. Why? Well, I didn't play this game with these guys. And I talked about the rebuilding of the Third Temple. And suddenly, it's like a big old not wanted sign. just go away, Ted. And you think, what the heck, man? What did I do? Well, I went against the narrative. Remember, this narrative has been being sown now for, what, almost 200 years. It took a long time for the teachings of Darby and Schofield to work its way and basically be accepted. Is this what they wanted to do? They bring us under Kabbalah? Is this a long-term plot they had and they put together to do this to the Christianity in the United States? I don't know. I love you guys. I appreciate you. You guys are absolutely awesome. And I'll talk to you tomorrow. Also, go ahead and finish up. I'll do the write-up.
I got it. Also, too, I want to add something on there. Dad was talking about the cruise ships, you know, when you have to give them your passport. Just something that a lot of people don't know about. If you don't have a passport or if you're renewing your passport soon, I didn't know about this till recently. That's why I'm bringing it up. You now, when you go to renew your passport, which mine had expired this year, so I renewed them and got new passports for the whole family, me, Lana, and the kids. You can now, when you do it, it's like a couple dollars more. You apply, and they give you a passport card, which it looks like a official United States of America driver's license almost, but it's not. It's a passport. It's literally a passport on a driver's license is what it looks like. Pretty nifty looking. There's no chip in it, and it's pretty much recognized worldwide. They still, when you do international trips, say like you fly into like Heathrow or, you know, you're going to Europe or something like that, you're still has to present your normal passport. But the ID card, the reason I'm bringing this up, is very good, because if you do have to hand your passport to a cruise ship, or something happens and you lose it or it gets stolen, you essentially have a backup passport that's very, very easy to keep with you in a wallet or a secure place, because it's about the size of a driver's license, and they're doing that now. And so I ordered those, obviously. I like them. I got them. And it's something just as a backup, because you don't realize, you know, I've traveled internationally multiple times, and you don't realize, I mean, your passport's pretty much your control card. I mean, that's how you get home. It's very difficult if you lose your passport. You got to start going to embassies and everything else to try to get back out of the country. So it becomes very, very, very difficult, at least with the ID you have with you. It's something as a backup, in my opinion. So if something does go sideways, like you're on a cruise ship and you get left or something else, you have the ability to get home a lot easier. Thank you guys for all the support. Be sure to check out the website if you guys need anything. Be Complex on sale for over 15% off next 2 days until it changes on product of the week. Be sure to vote for what you want to win. I think the vitamin E and the muscle blast are both pretty high votes right now. So be sure to check those out on the website if you guys need anything, or give us a call. CBD oil and the CBD balm are still up on the website. Great products, super popular, getting a lot of positive feedback from everybody. So we appreciate you guys. We love you. You guys have a blessed, safe, awesome day, and we'll talk to you again tomorrow as always.